So now is your opportunity. What we have are two microphones, which we're going to ask that people use.
This works, yes, you can hear it.
Dwayne, you're going to take one over, or someone's going to take one over to that side, and we will hand the mics to folks who want to be heard. Two things here. First, on the table up at the front, you'll see 6-inch binders, which are full of the materials that the Joint Use Planning Committee has compiled and reviewed. Feel free to take a look at those at any point during or after the meeting tonight. And the other thing is that in the interest of trying to get an accurate record of all of the comments and or questions, we do have a reporter who's taking down notes from, verbatim notes from everyone. So if you could please identify yourself by name and where you're from, and I'll remind you of the 3-minute time limit, and we'll start with you.
My name is Deborah Hamilton Paradis. I grew up in Belfast, and my son graduated from Cedarport High School. I remember when I was a child going across the sandbar, staying overnight, and when the tide went out, go home the next day. My sister, 11 and 12 years ago, passed away. Her ashes are spread on the right-hand side as you go onto that island, approximately 350 feet wide, past that big birch tree. My niece passed away. Her daughter passed away last fall. We had her service over there, and her ashes also are spread in the exact same place as her mother's. To me, that section of the island in green is highly sacred ground. It shakes me to the core to think that somebody will put a railroad and a road right over where their ashes are, like they were garbage. And I might say more about that. I called somebody a year ago from the Sierra Club. It was like, didn't matter at all. So I guess I thought I'd lay down in here. The other thing is, if we get this recreational thing, is it going to be handicapped accessible for scooters, small scooters and wheelchairs?
Thank you so much. If folks have questions, I may look to Dwayne and or Diane to direct those questions to who would be the best person to address that. Peter Tabor.
Well, I used to be a reporter. I don't want to go into my time period. I just had a question. Siona just was talking about a easement. All through this consensus agreement, it's referred to as a buffer easement. I wondered if she would or someone would comment, why is it called a buffer easement? Thank you.
That 3 days your time, do I guess?
It's not what I called it, but...
It's all through this document.
No, you're right. I wasn't part of that process.
Go ahead.
And you can see if I remember this correctly.
We're searching back in our memories.
In the second committee, trying to determine what would be an appropriate phrase for something that would... we could work out a document in which it would respect the preservation area and at the same time provide buffering. If we called it just a buffer, it wasn't sufficient enough to meet all the criteria needed in the future to preserve the land. If you have only an easement, then we would not need the requirement to have a buffer. So after much deliberation, getting in touch with a little league attorney on this verbiage, they came out that it would have to be best to call it a buffer easement at that time, at the time that that was made. Since that committee no longer exists now, and it's a new committee, one of the charges that we were given easement to better define what a buffer easement was, and we would have time to definitively decide. And that's what we're working on right now, is the process of defining what we are now calling an easement.
Well, I don't feel my question's been answered. What are we buffering from? You merely speak of buffering, but surely there must be some reference. Is a buffer against what?
There are three areas in which we right now preservation efforts the island. So we have to have a buffer on the Stockton Spring side, and if you notice, Dean showed it all the way around. There has to be there's going to be a 200 or 250 foot wide buffer on the Sandsport side. And when or if a port is ever built, it would be required, and we would want a buffer between the port and the preservation area.
So isn't it true that
why don't we try to see if we can broaden the conversation? And if you have follow-up questions,
well, my question isn't being answered. That's all.
My name is Sushi. I just have a quick question to help my understanding of the whole issue. You've now several times referred to this document as a consensus document. Now that leads me to believe that the state, I guess the Department of Transportation is one of the key players here, that the state wanted more at the outset. So I'd be interested to learn what it is that the state, the Department of Transportation in that case, wanted at the beginning of the process, and what it is that it had to compromise on. Because to me, it looks like the state got pretty much everything one could want, the port facility and a little bit of a cookie for the rest of us.
David, do you want to speak to the history of your team involvement?
Sure. I guess this most recent chapter now in history probably went back 3 or 4 years, that long ago now, when there was an LNG facility being discussed. And at that point, it was very clear that there were many people in the community in the region who didn't want an LNG facility. But then the question came up, what is the future of the island? The island had originally been purchased by the state of Maine through the department in the interest of preserving that option for deepwater port. It was clear that the entire island wasn't needed for that purpose. And after the issue with the LNG and the anxiety that had raised, it became also clear that over the last 30 or 40 years, there's been a cloud of uncertainty over this island. So the governor and many other folks felt that it was time to sit down and try to figure out a path for Sears Island. And the consensus agreement was a product of that effort. The island in its entirety has all lent itself to a transportation use. As a matter of fact, that portion that's been identified to be preserved for a potential, and I say a potential, nothing's been predetermined, nothing's been permitted, it's not being permitted now. But that is obviously situated near the deep water and that portion of the island. So this represents, in my mind, a compromise or a consensus, call it what you will, which looks at how do we determine a future for the island and also get value from the island for the people of the state of Maine, the people of this region, and the people of the community.
Right ahead, sir. Peter Chandler, I'm from Stockton Springs. My question is, if such a main facilities were to be built, would there be a height restriction on the number of containers that would be stacked so as to avoid the unpleasantness of, let's say, the fuel tanks that presently were opening at that point? They're an eyesore. If you're out of water, they're an eyesore. I presume a layer of 4 or 6 or 8 containers size would also be awesome.
Yeah. I don't want to presume what a private developer would need in order to run a cost-effective
containment facility. I would hope, however, that that is the type of thing that could be considered and done. I also don't want to presume what the permitting process might look like either, but there is the concept of green ports out there, and the idea of, you know, when you have a blank canvas and developing the port, you do it in such a way to minimize noise, visual effects, and that type of thing. But again, I'm just speculating because I don't know what the market will require, what the federal state regulators will require. Things are possible.
My name is Suzanne Farley. I'm a resident of Spearsport. I spend about an average of 10 hours a week on the island. It's very, very dear to me. I know that island very well. I walk all over it most days of the week. There's some things that are troubling me. As I watch the conservation plan be put up there, it just grips me in my gut. This island is fine the way it is. It's a lovely quiet island. It doesn't need to be sanitized. It doesn't need to be maintained. It doesn't need to have tables. It doesn't need to have trailheads. It doesn't need to have trailheads. There's a phenomenon going on in this country where we think we need to sanitize our wild land. We don't. I think about an author named Richard Louie who wrote a book called The Last Child in the Woods, where he talks about how important it is for children to have experiences in the wild area. I think there's a lot of people today in this panel that love the island, but I cannot understand how you would give it up. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. When you talk about minimizing noise with a cargo port that may go on the island, and frankly, I don't know why we keep using the word may, because it seems to me quite obvious to anybody with common sense that we're talking about putting some sort of port on this island. I don't know how the heck you would manage noise. I walk on the island in the morning and I can hear that point quite clearly. You can hear the subtlest noises as they carry across the water. That island is not that big. It looks kind of big when you set up a little map and you divide it up in your 400 acres here and your 600 acres there. But I'll tell you what, that's not very much land. And there is no way that you can tell me that you can have a nature conservation area combined with a developed port area. The island doesn't need any more concrete on it. What's on it is plenty. Anyways, I know that you're all public servants in the sense that you're volunteering. I know that you've worked hard, but I am not at all pleased with this joint process. I don't know why we have to have a joint process if hypothetically we don't think we're going to put a cargo port on the island. It doesn't make any sense at all to me. It's totally nonsensical. The other point I'm going to make before I close is that when I think about, when I read the Port Authority's strategic port report, and I notice that the commissioner sits on the board of directors and he sits on this committee as well, I can't, and when I read the part about Sears Point where it talks about what a great opportunity there is for port development as a strategic future. At the same time, it says that we will, you know, follow what the Joint Planning Committee recommends. I'm not very sophisticated in this matter, but I got to tell you, as a regular citizen, it makes me scratch my head and go, huh, what's wrong with this picture? It seems like a real conflict of interest to me. So with that.
Searsport with the MOU that said, Freedom of Transportation has taken 280 acres. It's not an option. We're not discussing it. We're taking the 280 acres. And we're going to let the town of Searsport use the rest of the 280 acres to do with it as they see fit, providing it doesn't interfere with the future port. And the town of Searsport reacted to that by completely rewriting it and sending the MOU back to your office with every reference to the 280-acre set-aside deleted. I'm sure there's people here that will nod their heads.
That's right.
They remember that that happened. I'm wondering, talk about this being a give-and-take process and a compromise process. The young man hit the nail on the head. You were asking 280. I remember back before that you were asking for 100 or something, and back in the 90s it was much less than that, much, much less than that. So I'm wondering what we ended up, we being, much as I hate to admit it, beside the conservation side, I'm on the conservation side, it's embarrassing to say, but I am. And I'm wondering what did we, the conservation side, get in exchange for giving you like 340, 80 acres or whatever? And one thing I deeply resent, having to hold my questions until every bit of information is given, because I'm getting old and I can't remember a lot of stuff. So when Dean was talking about the different slides, had a lot of questions run through my mind, as I'm sure a lot of other people did, but tightly controlled situations, tightly controlled information spreading situations are suspect. And I've almost lost my point, but I'm wondering what did we get in exchange for giving you the 200, the 341 acres, of which is not counted that longest stream that Dean pointed out that we got saved. It's like a brook on the median on 95. It's surrounded by transportation facilities. And I'm wondering, what did the environmental community get in exchange for giving you those extra acres?